your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a bit going this week again, and my gosh, the president has alluded to the fact that he may declare an emergency, a national emergency, concerning the building of this wall to stem the tide of this overwhelming immigration, this illegal immigration. But he's been backing off against that. He made an address to the nation, but he didn't bring it up. You know, he alluded to the fact that he might do it, but he didn't really go through with it. So people are not that happy with what he's been doing in a way, because they're wanting him to go ahead and come through on this, see, and do the right thing and get it done. Sean Hannity went down and interviewed him, so you might check out some of that on Fox. He went down there Thursday. The president took a trip down to McAllen area, and Sean Hannity was there and others, and they all said that yes, there is an emergency. Earlier in the week, Jim Acosta went down there and walked along the wall saying, "Oh, there's nothing. It's tranquil down here." I mean, that's just one little 100-foot strip down there. You can't make those kind of statements. But I mean, Jim Acosta is something else. I mean, He makes these off the wall, you know, statements like that, you know. I want to start the program with a comment made by a lady, Ms. Dirty, who lost her son, Dominic, okay? And she challenges Pelosi and tells Pelosi, "You got blood on your hands." And this is a very emotional pronouncement. And listen to Miss Dirty. She lost her son, and that was the dearest thing in her life. So here, listen to this.
Yeah.
For Nancy Pelosi, I have my only child's ashes in this urn. I carry his ashes in a little locket. This is the last time I got to touch my child. That's in the morgue. Those are his bruised, cold, dead hands with me touching him and kissing him the last time. And she doesn't just have blood on her hands. She needs boots, because that blood is rising. She's knee-deep in it. And if she doesn't get with the president to end this, she's going to need boots all the way up to her thigh, because it's getting worse. They need to get it.
Are you angry with the media?
Yeah.
That they use the words?
Tough
week for you. Well, just watching all this. Yeah, and hearing the same words every day.
Yeah,
I thought liberals were so compassionate.
Yeah, whatever.
It's
not
Trump's law.
No.
Is this manufactured?
No, it's not.
This is preventable. This is preventable in our country.
When the sanctuary state city issue, where you can't, criminal aliens, not just people that came here that want a better life, in jail, they let them go and basically assist them out the door so they don't get deported?
These sanctuary cities are wrong, and the fact that they are not protecting the American citizens. And Ronald Singh was an officer that recently, the day before Christmas, was shot by an assailant. And his brother, Rajiv Singh, was recently interviewed by Hannity. And this is just one example of the Singh family came over and immigrated legally about 15 years ago, I think 2003, and it took them 10 years to become naturalized citizens of the United States. And, you know, he said, Reggie Singh said his brother Ronald, the officer, the policeman that was shot and killed, had a dream about being a policeman his whole life, and finally it came through to fruition, and he became a policeman, a good one, and he was well loved by all of his department heads. But anyway, this is an interview by Sean Hannity of Reggie Singh, Ronald Singh, the policeman that lost his life. Here we go right now.
That have lost their loved ones to illegal immigrant crime, you know, the manufactured crisis, like the Singh family. They lost their 33-year-old police officer, son, brother, Ronald Singh, just a day after Christmas when he was killed during a traffic stop in Northern California. The suspect, Gustavo Perez Arriaga, had a long criminal record and suspected gang ties, but California's sanctuary policy protected him from being handed over to ICE, which would have meant he would have been deported. Officer Singh was an immigrant, a legal immigrant, who came from Fiji, came to this country as all immigrants do, legally, because they want a better life, the hope, the dreams for themselves, their families, their kids, to raise a family. But it was cut short by a criminal alien who never should have been here in the first place and who was in the criminal justice system and should have been long deported. Joining us now is talk about his life is his brother. Reggie Singh is with us. Reggie, thanks for being with us. I know this is still fresh. This is raw for you. You met with the president yesterday. You were in Texas where we were. What did the president say?
Yes. The president just wanted to know how the family was doing, if there's anything he could do to help out. We had a good conversation about Ronell. He asked some questions. That was it.
Yeah. Your family came here legally. It takes a long time, right? You've got to go through. It takes some time to get here.
We came here in 2003. It takes about 10 years, I would say, to get you to go through the whole process. They do a medical background check, a criminal background. If everything's fine, then the process is proceeded to the next step. Mm-hmm. But it's a process. And then you come here. In Ronil's case, we were green card holders for 5 years. Then he was asked to get his citizenship in order to become a law enforcement
And he always agent. Wanted to be in law enforcement. So that was his dream. He wanted to protect and serve. He always wanted to do that.
Yes, he always wanted to be a law enforcement, a cop in California.
Wow.
And that was one of the reasons we came here, so he could become a cop.
Well, let me deal directly with the fact, and you heard the comments of then-Governor Jerry Brown dismissing the fact that the sanctuary state status of California had anything to do with this, but the reality is the individual that killed your brother was already in the justice system. And because of the sanctuary laws, that prevents the state of California from informing ICE, handing over on the release date of their prison sentence, handing over to ICE that individual for deportation and enforcement of federal law. Does that make it even more bitter for you? It's hard to lose your brother, but when you find out we had him, he should have been deported, and he was protected by a state law.
So, we wake up with anger that this could have been preventable. I wasn't aware of what sanctuary state and this rules and regulation meant, but I was explained how it worked. It could have been preventable. We wake up with anger that, he should have been deported in the first place, but he wasn't due to the sanctuary law we have in California.
Yeah. I know this is fresh, like the Corcorans, this is new, this is hard, painful. You're in our thoughts and prayers. I'm so sorry. It sounds like your brother. Everything I've heard, I interviewed the sheriff, I interviewed the police chief out there. They loved your brother. He was a great cop. They're just devastated themselves. So you're in our prayers. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. And the best to your family.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
See, there are some good people out here that have immigrated legally into the country. You know, Cher, she had some negative things to say about Trump, but listen to these statements that that she just has been expressing through her tweets about to Pelosi. I think this is addressed to Pelosi, and I believe Hannity brought this up on his let's see, I believe it was brought up on Tucker Carlson's program. I think on Friday brought this up. So listen to this carefully.
Well, so far, Democratic lawmakers here in Washington, the leaders of the Democratic Party, are refusing to budge at all on the question of a border wall. But not everyone on the left thinks that building a wall is completely insane. Some seem almost open to it. Over on The Daily Show, one host recently suggested there are worse things than giving the president $5 billion for his signature policy.
Thanks to Trump, we've learned that during a national emergency, a president can do way more than just build a wall. Right. Shut down your internet, send the troops in. You can just control the country. So if I'm the Democrats, I would give Trump the wall before he finds out what he can really do.
Meanwhile, Cher, the famous person out in L.A., is very upset. Today she tweeted at Nancy Pelosi in all caps, naturally, quote, "For Trump, this is political, but real people are really suffering. Nancy, you were a hero. Let him have his effing money. People will starve, lose their homes, be unable to call doctors."
So even Cher is saying, hey, Nancy Pelosi, let's end this thing. Let's get on with it. Let's give him his money and like he promised his supporters. And, well, more than that. It's not about meeting a campaign promise. It's more important than that. It's our border security. So Cher is right about that. And so, you know, we got to get on with this thing and try to make into headway and get this thing funded, you know, and get on down the road, you know. But, it's amazing what's going on sometimes in this country. We're gonna talk about this 5G. We've got a medical doctor before Congress testifying, Dr. Goldberg, and then there's a TEDx speech given also, and so we're going to get into that also. But anyway, this is the first clip is Dr. Goldberg and what she says about 5G. Here we go now.
I'm Sharon Goldberg. I'm an internal medicine physician. I've practiced medicine for 21 years, and my background is mostly academic, internal medicine, hospital-based, clinical research, and medical education. I am going to skip many of the things I wanted to say because I didn't realize it was only 5 minutes. Wireless radiation has biological effects, period. This is no longer a subject for debate when you look at PubMed and the peer-reviewed literature. These effects are seen in all life forms, plants, animals, insects, microbes. In humans, we have clear evidence of cancer now. There is no question. We have evidence of DNA damage, cardiomyopathy, which is the precursor of congestive heart failure, neuropsychiatric effects. So 5G is not a conversation about whether or not these biological effects exist. They clearly do. 5G is a conversation about unsustainable healthcare expenditures. Why do I say this? We've been sitting on the evidence for EMR and chronic disease for decades. And now we are seeing all these epidemics appearing. So diabetes is the first epidemic. I think most of you know the statistics. They're very scary. 1 in 3 American children will become diabetic in their lifetime, and if they're Hispanic females, the number is 1 in 2. So what does this have to do with wireless radiation? Wireless radiation and other electromagnetic fields, such as magnetic fields and dirty electricity, have been clearly associated with elevated blood sugar and diabetes. That is what the peer-reviewed literature says. It is not opinion. The closer you live to a cell tower, the higher your blood glucose. That is based on hemoglobin A1C measurements. So the idea with small cells of putting the cells closer to people's homes and bedrooms, scientifically, is very dangerous. And from an economic perspective, it's dangerous. And you may not know this. I was shocked to find this out. But the way you create a model of diabetes in rats in the lab is by exposing them to 2.4 gigahertz. And this is not for long-term exposure. So, I don't have time to talk about the costs, but the huge problem with diabetes really is chronic kidney disease. End-stage renal disease, the worst complication of diabetes, leads to hemodialysis. Hemodialysis is an automatic qualification for Medicare. And if you don't qualify for Medicare, we still have to dialyze the patient. And the state ends up paying in many different instances. So renal failure is 1% of Medicare, but it takes up 7% of all Medicare expenditures. I don't have time to talk about this anymore, but once again, we have... So the other epidemics that clearly link from the science with electromagnetic radiation are related to mental health. And this is straight from PubMed. This isn't my opinion. This is science. Okay?
Medical, mm-hmm. For those of us who aren't physicians, what is PubMed?
I'm sorry. It's just it's our National Library of Medicine. This is where you would go. This is just the peer-reviewed literature. So we have three epidemics that clearly, they're essentially one epidemic. We have deterioration of mental health in the United States. And if you look really at the science, what does it show? And these epidemics are our suicide epidemic, epidemics in violent, so shootings, and the opioid epidemic. And I don't have 5 minutes is not the time to talk about this. This is in the peer-reviewed literature. I have a file to submit for the record. But these are facts. These are things that have just been glossed over by the wireless industry, and I really don't have time to talk about them in 5 minutes. I wish I did. But we need to examine our epidemics in the context of our EMF exposures. What does that mean? That means that the CDC tracking these epidemics we need to start measuring how much radiation are people being exposed to. And before we roll out 5G, and this means there are four kinds of electromagnetic fields that we know are harmful to human health. So radio frequency radiation, magnetic fields, dirty electricity, and electric fields. Okay? Our exposure, any given person, and all humans are affected by EMFs. Our given exposure has nothing to do with the research that my colleagues are going to cite with the National Toxicology Program. That is an assessment of the risk of one cell phone in the near field. Okay? What is our exposure? In a day, it's not one cell phone. It's cell phones, it's multiple wireless networks, it's smart meters, it's cell towers. It's this sandwich, and it all adds up. And this is a serious problem for occupational health, public safety, and personal safety. And I feel that it's irresponsible to be even talking about the Internet of Things and rolling out a new untested technology when we're not even measuring what are our current exposures from the current networks.
Boy, this is getting scary, 5G and exposure to all this cell phone radiation. What we have next is a TEDx interview, actually a speech by Jeremy Johnson. He's an expert in EMF exposure, and especially this is a wireless wake-up call. So here we go now with Jeremy Johnson, an excellent speech. Here we go now.
So I'd like to begin by asking a few questions. Who knows if they have a wireless smart meter on their home? Okay. And who has their smartphone in their pocket right now? Great. And who's read the fine print in your owner's manual that says that the smartphone should never be within about an inch of the body? So today, I'm going to speak to why we can no longer assume that our wireless technology is safe. Technology has allowed us many benefits. It's connected us to people and to places, and it's brought us convenience that few could have imagined just 10 years ago. It's also brought us tremendous economic benefits. If we can look at how technology has increased in our lives in just the last 8 years, it started with the iPhone and then tablet computing, ubiquitous Wi-Fi, the smart meter and the smart home, and wearable tech, and now the Internet of Things. If we could imagine how this would look, it would actually look like this. This is an artist's rendition of what Wi-Fi in our public spaces looks like. We could actually hear what microwave radiation sounds like with a device like this. So if anybody would like to hear what their smartphone or their smartwatch sounds like, come and see me at the end, and I can show you. But how does this affect our bodies? That's the question I want to ask, because this exponential rise in microwave radiation can have effects. And that's what scientists and medical doctors around the world are now saying, especially when it comes to children, because they're going to be affected by this their entire lives. But today I also want to share a few solutions. I want to give everyone here things that you can do in your own lives in order to reduce this type of exposure. So I actually got into this topic about 5 years ago. Before then, I was a young technology enthusiast. I always used my smartphone and Wi-Fi. I've worked in Silicon Valley and have a master's degree in engineering. So if anyone had told me that wireless technology could have health effects, I would have thought they're crazy. So if you're thinking that right now, I can relate. But this all changed for me over the period of about 1 week. I started to experience headaches, ringing in the ears, insomnia, and a fatigue and brain fog that I'd never experienced before. And I shared this with a colleague at work, and she said, you know, the exact same thing happened to her husband when a wireless smart meter was installed in their home. So I went home that evening, and I checked downstairs, and sure enough, we had a bank of wireless smart meters installed right below our bedroom in San Francisco. So this started me on a journey to learn as much about this topic as I possibly could. I now have a website about this, and I'm contacted by people all around the world every day who are experiencing the exact same things. It can be when they have a wireless smart meter installed, or a new Wi-Fi router, or even a cell tower placed across the street from their home. These are the common symptoms that people start to experience. This is actually from a published paper on the health effects of wireless smart meters. So, just here in the Bay Area, I'm in touch with dozens of people who've had their lives changed by this. Medical doctors, high school principals, teachers and students, IT professionals, and even entrepreneurs. These are people who had a normal life, and then over a short period of time, went to where they could no longer work, where they could no longer go to an office. Some of them actually have had to move out of their homes because they can't be in an environment which is normal now for most people. I've been in touch with people around the world who've become homeless because of this. There's many people that's actually happened to. And unfortunately, I know of people who've actually taken their lives because there's essentially no place they can go. And this is something that society does not yet recognize. My own life has been tremendously changed by this. After that first exposure to wireless smart meters, now I can no longer be in an environment with strong Wi-Fi for very long. So I can't go to my work the way I used to be able to. Most environments are now essentially toxic to me. So even finding a safe place to live has become very difficult. Imagine not being able to live in an apartment building where everyone has Wi-Fi, or to be able to live next to a cell tower. This is what this is actually a proposed cell tower here in Berkeley. The residents have actually stopped it for now, but most churches and most schools now have cell towers on them. And so it exposes the people around them and, of course, the students who go to those schools. This is a cell tower in San Francisco. That brown thimble on top of the telephone pole is a cell tower. And these are being placed every couple blocks. So you could have an amazing home, and then 1 week, a company can come and put a cell tower right outside your window. So this is something that's happening throughout the Bay Area, and it's going to be happening throughout the United States. So it makes it so that people like myself have a hard time finding a place to live, but it also is ratcheting up the exposure of the entire population. So you might be asking, perhaps some people are being injured by this, but if you're not feeling it, it's probably not that big of a deal. And I think that's a very common experience. But it's not as simple as saying that just a few unfortunate people are being affected by this. Because what the science shows is that we're all affected on some level, whether we can feel it or not. And the reason is because essentially our bodies are electric. Every cell in our body communicates using tiny electric signals. It's how our nervous system operates. So to think that we could put an exponential amount of microwave radiation into our environment and not feel effects is simply false. To illustrate this, I actually had many friends come to me when I started to experience this, and they would say, "Jeremy, are you sure you aren't making this up in your head?" And I thought this too, myself, at the beginning. But then a year or two later, they would come to me and they'd say, "You won't believe it, but now I'm feeling pain in my arm when I use my cell phone, or when I put it to the head, or when a new Wi-Fi router is installed." So this is something where when people have a more of an exposure, more people are being affected. And it's not just headaches and insomnia. It's much more serious things, such as infertility, DNA damage, and eventually cancer. This is what the research is starting to show. And you don't have to take my word for it. I encourage you to start researching this for yourselves. If you simply Google EMF research, this is a screenshot of what you'll find. The World Health Organization is the first link there, and they actually in 2011 came out and said this wireless technology is possibly carcinogenic. Now there's scientists around the world that say that it's most likely carcinogenic. The third link there is actually my own website. It's there because the last 5 years I've gathered research from around the world that shows that we now have enough evidence to at least take precaution when it comes to this technology. So isn't this regulated? And this is one of the most interesting things I've found. The Federal Communications Commission is who is supposed to be regulating wireless technology. But if you look at the regulations, they're almost 20 years old. So that means our most advanced technology is using science that's at least 20 years old. But not only that, they're based on a concept which is nearly 50 years old, which says if microwave radiation does not heat us, then it can't possibly hurt us. But there's now hundreds of studies that show that this is false. So how is it that we have a regulatory body that's not protecting the public? Well, like many issues, like many public health issues in our country, you end up having industry influencing the regulatory body. And that's what's happening here. So you have a revolving door between the wireless lobby and the FCC commission. So that's what's happening. Plus, the science is heavily influenced by industry funding. This is a study by Dr. Henry Lai. He looked at 326 studies based on the biological effects of cell phone radiation. He found that about half of the studies showed effects and half didn't. That's pretty normal for this type of research. But what he found that was interesting was that if you looked at who funded the studies, 70% of the independent studies showed effects, and only 32% of the industry-funded studies showed effects. So you see that there's an influence in money on this topic. Just like many other topics, tobacco is another one where essentially the industry-funded science that was going to show their products were safe. So that's the bad news. And now I want to share some good news. And that is that there are solutions for this. We are going to have the industry start to create safer products, but there are ways that we can both protect ourselves and move industry forward. So one of the primary things we can do is to move towards fiber optics, because this is a way that we can make our homes safer, our businesses, and our schools. So fiber optics are safe, they're secure, and there's absolutely, they're one of the fastest things we can use. Another way we can go is to design products which are safer. So currently we have product designers and engineers working together, but we can bring in biophysicists and biologists to work together to create products that don't just emit right underneath the FCC regulations, but emit the least amount of any type of electromagnetic fields as possible. If smart meters had been designed to use either fiber optics or to emit just once or twice a day rather than the 10,000 times they do emit, then I wouldn't be standing here today and thousands upon thousands of people around the world would not have been injured by smart meters. So what are some things that all of us can do? This is one of the most important things because everyone wants to know how to essentially protect themselves and their families. So the first thing is to make sure we use our cell phones wisely. I mentioned that you don't want to put the cell phone within about an inch of the body. The industry is telling us this now. So make sure you use speakerphone, get an air tube headset, and when it's on the body, make sure that you put it on airplane mode, when it's either in the pocket or sometimes in the bra. And when it comes to kids, we don't want to have kids use cell phones, but if they must, then please teach them how to use these wisely. We can wire our homes. This is, most people don't need Wi-Fi in their home. So move towards Ethernet, move towards fiber optics, and if you must have Wi-Fi, make sure you turn it off at night. You can get a simple timer, so you don't even have to think about it. When it comes to kids, we want to reduce their exposures as much as possible. So if they use an iPad, put all of the data on the iPad and then turn the Wi-Fi off. In schools, I simply do not think we need to have Wi-Fi in schools because we're filling those classrooms with microwave radiation. We can have amazing technology, but it can be wired. And this is where I think we're going to have to go. When it comes to the smart meter and the smart home, I recommend you opt out. I've had wealthy, early adopting families contact me who went all in on the smart home. And they ended up getting sick within a few months. So this is something that affects families, and I just recommend that you don't go down this path because it's a technology we do not need. And one of the last things I want to, solutions I want to give today is to create a safe place to sleep, because this is one of the most important things, because this is when your body rejuvenates and it's when you can make sure that everything's off. So turn off all your wireless devices, unplug things. If you have a baby monitor, I actually recommend that you turn that off, especially at night. I just do not recommend those for kids. And if you do these things, I know many people who've ended up sleeping better. They have much clearer during the day, and their fatigue is much less. So this is something which I recommend everyone can do. So in conclusion, I want to say that this is a problem that we can solve. There's tremendous people around the world working on this right now. And I believe we're coming to a tipping point where enough people realize that this is an important topic and that there are solutions. So I recommend that you share this with the people who are closest to you. Because if enough people wake up to this issue, then industry will start creating safe technology. And once they do that, our entire society can move towards a healthier future. Thank you.
So that 5G is very serious. We've got to start taking it seriously. Coming up next is a short interview with my co-host, Charlotte Littlefield Brown. She's in bed, not feeling too good today. But I did call her at her home and wanted to find out what she thought about She Wants Bird Box last week. And I was sort of trying to feel her out on what she thought about that. And she thinks it might have been a little bit of hype. But anyway, here we go with her interview. We pre-recorded for this evening's broadcast. Here we go now with Charlotte Littlefield Brown. Here we go now.
Yeah, Bird Box was a sci-fi thriller where you never see the monster.
Okay.
And it was played by Sandra Bullock. And I thought it was an okay horror flick. You know, it wasn't all that. You didn't change the ending. There was no choices. It was just a standard horror flick.
Okay. I mean, they built it up. I think there was 45 million people that live streamed to off of Netflix last Friday, a week ago yesterday. And so.
Yeah.
So, you know, people are coming out, you know, they're in a rowboat or something. What was that about?
Well, the movie, there was a radio message. Okay, the catastrophe happens. The monster shows up and people start killing themselves.
Okay.
And there was a radio communication between Sandra Bullock's character and some of the people that there was a safe haven. But you had to get on this river and you had to go down this boat and you had to do all this stuff. And to get to the safe haven where you could live, where the monsters wouldn't make you kill yourself.
Okay, then if you saw the monster, is that why they have blindfolds on in the rowboat so that they don't see the monster?
Right.
Because if you see the monster,
right,
one of the storylines is then you'll kill yourself. Do people actually, are they shown killing themselves in the movie or what?
Yeah, in the beginning.
At the beginning.
The opening, it's pretty dramatic.
It's pretty dramatic in doing that, huh? But then, okay, so we're going in with this interview for this weekend, tonight, later, pre-recorded now, but what is your overall assessment of Bird Box overall?
Well, I'm not a big fan of the horror dramas, you know, because they scare me and I don't like the suspense, but my overall take was it was a pretty good movie. It wasn't anything all that, you know, remarkable. You know, I think there's a lot of hype.
Okay, so they hyped it to try to get more people online, right, to see it? Is that it?
Right, yeah.
I got you. Well, any other comments on anything else you'd like to say before we sign off in this recorded interview or what?
Oh, no, that was it.
Okay, well, Charlotte, thank you. Charlotte Littlefield Brown, my co-host, telling us a little bit about her view on Bird Box and her feelings about it and her comment. Thank you a lot, Charlotte, for being with us this evening, okay?
All right, George, thank you.
Bye-bye. Good night. We're going to follow that up with a couple of interviews by the co-producer and the writer, Charlie Brooker, of a series out of U.K., it's called Black Mirror. And in this particular series, you can change the ending by choosing what the hero or the main, you know, could say actor or role player wants to do or so forth. So, and Black Mirror is supposed to reflect somewhat what is that darkness in everyone. This is why it's very dangerous. It nurtures these kinds of dynamics. But here we go with the first interview, and then we'll follow it with a second one.
Charlie and Annabelle, thank you very much for talking to us. Bandersnatch, it's fair to say it's been quite divisive. Have you been kind of shocked by the reaction to it?
You say yes, I say no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes?
No?
No, you said you say yes, you say... No.
But then you did no.
I always knew it would be experimental. Yeah. So if you do something experimental, people are going to... And also, we don't know exactly what playthrough people are going to have.
Yeah.
So they're going to react to it differently. It's different if you're watching it alone or in a group. It's different if you're watching it on your TV, which I think is the best way to do it, or on a tablet. So, eh.
Are you worried that you've kind of, opened Pandora's box? You've ruined telly for lazy people like me who just don't want to be, into kind of involve themselves in decisions all the time.
You must have been furious when teletext was invented and when remote controls came along. We went, I'm not doing this. Interactive telly. I don't want to turn the volume up and down.
Have to choose a channel. Or
yeah, I don't want this. What? Vote for who wins the X Factor? I refuse.
I'm playing devil's advocate. I loved it.
Okay.
We did do a thing about which TV shows we would like to bandersnatch ourselves, where you can sort of choose a different outcome. Are there any kind of classic sort of Who Shot JR type moments?
The news? News, that would be good. On any given day, it would be good if you could just alter the outcome of the news.
That would be absolutely brilliant, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it came out at the same time as Bird Box on Netflix, which is quite a big hit. Were you kind of annoyed?
Bird, what did you say?
Bird Box. Were you annoyed that that came out and sort of your people?
Oh,
you
were so angry.
No.
Who is she?
Sandra.
Who?
No.
There are films released. No. How can you possibly be?
I just wondered if it might have been a bit of a thunderstorm. There's no Bandersnatch challenge yet, is there? So what would that involve?
That would involve deciding what breakfast cereal you want in a few seconds, I think.
What can you tell us about the new series?
Very little.
Right. Well, I know that Miley Cyrus is in one, is that right?
We can tell you very little
Miley
about...
Miley who? This is going to be my refrain for the whole interview.
Did he say Miley?
Ex-what?
Miley?
It's coming out this year.
It's coming out this year, so
I
it's
think
so
we can say.
Imminent.
Wow, great. Okay.
It's non-interactive in that it's just regular films and stories.
Oh, thanks,
stories.
Out.
Which you can choose to watch or not, so it's interactive in that respect. And it's fun.
Yeah.
Should be
good.
Fun.
Lots of
stuff
new,
in it, new
yeah.
things.
New genres.
There's human beings in it.
Okay.
Sounds.
Yeah.
Images, I believe.
And what the choice to sort of put this out separately, was that because this was such a piece of... I mean, I read something that doing this was kind of equivalent to doing four episodes.
Yeah.
Did you... Was there a point when you kind of felt like you were going to fall down a kind of Bandersnatch wormhole yourselves?
Oh,
was
God.
We did.
Yeah. Every day. Everyone.
Really early on we did.
Yeah. There were moments where we had, nearly every day, head in hands going... Where is this in the story? How do we get here? What have they just been through? And literally sort of having to write notes, even though we knew all the story, you'd have to sort of write little notes going, yes, well, if you've done this and done this, and then you'd get there, and you'd go, right, okay, I've got that. I mean, just constant. And which is, of course, what Stefan is doing in his bedroom when he's like, it's just too much. There were a lot of heated debates and arguments.
So life imitates art.
We went a bit Colin Rittman.
Yeah.
Neither of you chopped up each other's body, though, during the process.
But we dreamt of it.
We did seriously fantasise about it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
The very final quick question. People have had great fun finding the Easter eggs and secret things in it. Are there still some to be discovered?
I believe so, because there's some references to stories we haven't... No one's... episodes.
There'll be clues. Okay, great.
So they're not Easter eggs yet?
They're future Easter... What's it?
They're in the
unhatched
seeds.
Yeah.
I was about to say the seeds of Easter eggs, and then I realised that eggs don't really have seeds.
Ooh, chicken. They're a chicken.
A chicken. But
you invented
an egg.
Anything?
No, because a chicken comes after an egg. That's to answer the famous question. It's obvious which came first, the chicken or the egg. The egg came first, otherwise it wouldn't be a fucking chicken.
I wasn't expecting to get that philosophical question answered.
Why, I don't even know why it's a debate. The egg came first, obviously. Where did the egg come from? God.
And on that note, that's my time. Thank you very much and congratulations on breaking telly.
Thanks.
Oh!
That was the first interview with Charlie Brooker and Annabelle Jones, creators of this Black Mirror. And then we're going to follow that up. There was another production of that, and it enlarges a little bit about this these real reality and so forth. But here we go with this next.
Since its third series debuted on Netflix, Black Mirror creators Charlie Brooker and Annabelle Jones have seemingly become more and more interested in tying their episodes together, dropping references from one story into another, sometimes multiple others. Interactive episode Bandersnatch is no different, with dozens of Easter eggs littered across its many branches. I got the chance to chat to Brooker and Jones this week and posed a question I've heard more and more recently. Is there a Black Mirror universe, or BMU?
A BMU.
A Black Mirror.
Bowel movement. Bowel movement uncovered. A Black Mirror universe.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, though? You see, what we've done there, because people often say, well, okay, so like Tuckersoft, for instance, in this, is that the same company that TCKR in San Junipero who do... Yes, I think it is. But also, we're having our cake and eating it, because as Colin says... Well, within Bandersnatch, there's many multiple realities going on at the same time. So we have a shared Black Mirror multiverse, is now what I'm saying, in which we can do whatever the bloody hell we feel like doing it anyway. It's kind of like the Spider-Man movie that came out recently, the Spider-Verse, which was excellent.
It was very good, wasn't it?
Keep on message. But not as good as Bandersnatch.
So a BMM is what we're
BMM,
saying.
A bowel movement multiverse.
Yeah.
Full of shit.
I wondered whether you expected such a sort of outpouring of people collating ideas and like wild theories about what they've noticed in connection to other episodes.
Well, we know certainly that by now people are keen to unearth Easter eggs. So we sort of sprinkle them in there partly for a laugh, partly because sometimes it's easier than having to go out and clear the name of a fictional company. Like a fictional, not fictional, just made up a word. You just use one you've cleared before, so it's also lazy. we knew people would dig into it. I'm surprised that people sort of think there might be extra phone numbers and things like that. I've seen sort of conspiracy theories involving the colours, the use of colours in it, where people are going, that's a hidden code. I wish we'd been that clever.
That's season 5.
That's season 10. Yeah.
No, it's always very rewarding and satisfying when people... But often we are reusing things because they thematically make sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, the white bear glyph that is so prevalent in the film and, it's a reference to an earlier episode where, you know, our protagonist was reliving every day then. So there's lots of things that just feel very fruitful.
That was a nice aha moment, because that was in White Bear, it's all to do with this sort of control, justice, this sort of movement. And there was a moment where we were discussing this and we had drawn a little flow chart, and I suddenly noticed that there was the symbol from White Bear in the middle of it. It was like, ooh. That, I literally did that.
Are there references in here to episodes we haven't seen yet?
Yes.
That's very exciting. Well, nice. Well, thank you very much for your time, guys.
I could have just said that and then I'll go off and write that episode.
So, keep your eyes open for Bandersnatch references in Season 5. But before that, why not check out our reactions to the episode and what it looked like when Netflix built a real-life Bandersnatch game store in London.
Gotta go for that game story. It's just too much. Well, what blackness are we bringing to our populations out here? This is not good stuff. I deplore it. I criticize it. It's not high-minded and inspirational. We're going to end the program with Robert Lifton being interviewed on a program, Conversations with History. And he talked about some very, very important issues. Not like all of this Bandersnatch and all this other stuff we've been dealing with tonight, or Bird Box, but some very important issues. Here we go, Robert Lifton.
Of creation and recreation of images and forms within the mind. And why has that become such a central problem in our time, do you think?
Well, I came upon the idea of what I call psychic numbing. At first I called it psychic closing off, in trying to understand what Hiroshima survivors were describing to me. They would say such things as, the bomb fell, or there was this, they would describe the experience they had, and I saw this array of dead and dying people around me, and I saw everything, but suddenly I simply ceased to feel anything. And some use the metaphor of a photographic plate that was overexposed. It was as though the mind was shut off. And I came to call that psychic numbing. And then when I thought about that, I began to wonder not just about those who are exposed to the atomic bomb. What about those who make not just atomic but nuclear weapons, hydrogen bombs? And I thought about the psychic numbing involved in strategic projections of using hydrogen bombs or nuclear weapons of any kind. And I also thought about ways in which all of us undergo what could be called the numbing of everyday life. That is, we're bombarded by all kinds of images and influences, and we have to fend some of them off if we're to take in any of them, or to carry through just our ordinary day's work, or really deepen whatever we have to do or say. And yet, it isn't all negative. For instance, I realize that if you take the example of a surgeon who's performing a delicate operation, you don't want him or her to have the same emotions as a family member of that person being operated on. There has to be some level of detachment where you bring your technical skill to bear on it. And from that, I formulated a model for professional work that I saw myself working at, and others too, of a combination of advocacy and detachment. And the detachment involved could involve selective professional numbing of that kind, but one's advocacy was right out there as well, as was mine, in studying as accurately and as rigorously as I could the effects of the atomic bombings, but at the same time coming to that study as a person very worried and critical about nuclear weapons.
Now, in speaking of this problem of dealing with death and the realities of the new kinds of realities that we're creating in our world with things like nuclear weapons, what is available to terrorist groups in the way of biological warfare. You talk about that in previous times that we've had various ways of dealing with this problem of our own death, through children, through the notion of life after death, through our good works, our creative products, through identification with eternal nature. But you point to the notion that in our time, what you call experiential transcendence seemed to be on the horizon more than it had been in the past.
Well, what I was talking about there was how all of us, not just religious people or people who think philosophically, but all of us need some sense of being part of something that precedes and extends beyond what we know in some parts of our mind, however we may deny it, to be our limited lifespan. As human beings, we are the animals or the creatures who know that we die, however we fend off that knowledge. And being part of something larger than ourselves is what I call the symbolization of immortality, and that can be done through biologically our children or our works, our influences in the world, or through being bound up with eternal nature, also through some sort of religious belief system. But all these are in some way called into question, both by the rapidity of historical change, where we lose a clear sense of value structures or belief systems, and also through the existence of ultimate weapons, or what I call imagery of extinction, that accompanies ultimate weapons. Every adult in the world has some sense that he or she might be obliterated at any time by these weapons that we have created. And that, at least, it doesn't destroy our need for symbolic immortality or our ways of expressing it, but it does cast doubt to these ways. And I think that's why we tend to then embrace what I took to be a fifth form, which is the experience of transcendence or seeking high states, whether it's through meditation or drugs or something that takes us beyond ourselves or into something like what we call ecstasy, which can be in quiet or very dramatic ways. And of course, we have seen much of that, not just in the 60s in this country and afterwards, but I think continuously. And I think that nuclear weapons have something to do with it, importantly, and so does the speed and confusions of historical change. And then a third dimension that relates to both of these is the mass media revolution, which feeds us with so much in the way of imagery, as we were discussing before, that we become ever less certain of what structures we want to stay with or believe.
Robert Lifton made a point in concluding with this mass media. He says that they inundate us and they overwhelm us with so many different symbols and information that it's hard for us sometimes to know what to believe in. So I ended this program because I had to cover the Bird Box and the Bandersnatch and all this pop culture out there, and that's all it is. It comes and goes. But real culture, like a Beethoven, you know, symphony, or some great artwork by Da Vinci or Raphael or whoever, you know, Degas or whatever, you know, they don't come and go. They're there for a long time, and people do appreciate that. Now, we got into this modern art thing. Modern art, that's not my cup of tea. But we've got to get back, try to get back, and extinguish this and expunge it, this darkness. That is our dark part of our soul, the dark part of our personality, the dark part of our psychology. And we've got to try to utilize through forgiveness of self and others a higher state. And that's what he spoke to, Robert Lifton spoke to, was that we're using drugs and religions and all these other mechanisms to try to attain what he said was the seeking of a higher state. But we lose it, especially in the drug culture, and we lose it on this pop culture instead of trying to truly strive for an enlightened self, a self that appreciates inspirational ideas, that seeks itself to promulgate and to create very inspirational works of art that can touch the hearts and heal the hearts and add that forgiveness medicine to each and every person in the world. We want to thank each and every one of you tonight, especially Charlotte Littlefield Brown for giving her input on that Bird Box. Thank you, Charlotte. There are some higher and better things to think about for the mind to dwell on. And this is what we need to do. We need to get back to things that really can make a difference in our lives. And we can touch the hearts of our fellow men, and we can try to heal those hearts and so forth. That's why Charlotte and I have been dwelling on forgiveness for so long, because that is one mechanism that can truly overcome some of this hate and resentment that we're continually overcome by. And that's why this pop culture, again, I'll come back to that and close with some, comments. It doesn't benefit us at all. It pops our soul. It blackens our soul. It does not give rise to a higher mindedness. It's only degrades our soul, and it's bad, and it should not be there. Good night.